If it's happening in the Coachella Valley, it's front and center now.
I love your show. I just love it.
He calls it as he sees it.
So my daughter turned me on to you, and you're awesome.
Live from the Palm Springs iHub.
You know, as a businessman, I spend my entire day, I work hard for the, you know, make money for my family. So I don't have the time to invest and to know what's going on, you know. And that's why I listen to your show, because you tell it exactly the way it is.
This is the Russ Betts Show on iHub Radio.
Welcome back to Hour 2 of the Russ Betts Show. I'm Russ Betts, your host for the next hour here in beautiful iHub Studios in the Coachella Valley. If you missed the first hour, you can pick it up on the podcast. I broke every rule of this show by, you know, the rule is don't go national. Well, we went there, and we touched on it. It started with a me rolling out of bed and responding to a Facebook post, and all of a sudden it turns into this big tirade and commotion, and well, we covered all that in the first hour. Go back and give a listen. It should be interesting. But now we're turning to a special guest who's joining us. Hails now from Washington, used to be here in the Coachella Valley. He's a prolific author. I'm sitting here looking on Amazon at all the books, trying to actually get the listing of the latest one so I can do a quick review on it. Bill Effinger, welcome to the Russ Betts Show.
Thanks, Russ.
Okay.
Nice to be here.
Good to have you. You know, Bill, you gave me the title of the book, and I'm just going to have to let you give that to us again, because the last time we talked, we were looking at How to Kill a Mockingbird or The Great Brain Robbery, and you've got a few since then. What's the name of the latest book?
The latest one, which is being published this week, is The Road Ahead, Returning to Civility.
And I'm presuming this is about talking about national politics and the state of the country?
It is. And the last several books were the same. I tracked the Trump presidency, and the books are all a series. They're very historic in nature. They're a series of hundreds and hundreds of uploaded articles from a wide range of newscasts and news articles. And it's like a running history. Anybody that has these in their library, they'll know everything that occurred for the last 4 years. And this latest book is now projecting what hopefully is a change in a good direction.
So do you think that's going to happen? Because I'm not seeing signs of it. We've got an impeachment hearing going on in the Senate that doesn't have a chance of passing. It seems to be all political and anything but civility. It's anything but bury the hatchet. What's going on with that one? You address that in your book?
Oh, yeah. I've got it, and I'll track it for sure. And really, we're not going to have, I don't think Trump is going to go out of sight. I mean, he's going to be there for the next 4 years. Well, all indications are there. But I am hoping that we will have a civil kind of a next couple of years just to get the country straightened out.
Yeah, well, he's definitely not out of sight, even if he utters. If he just stayed quiet, it seems he's not out of sight, because the first thing I woke up this morning, the very first post out that somebody put on Facebook was about Trump and his new attorneys, and then it went into a big firestorm. I made the mistake of just offering a little quip. You're talking about Trump? I thought he was no longer around, and that just set off everybody. That's not like anybody's ready to be quiet and civil.
Well, and of course, the media just plays into that, and the more they give him ink, the more he'll be in front of us.
Well, he's going into this impeachment hearing, and the if you can believe the reports that are out there, is he fired his entire team because what he wants to do is use this for a stage to continue to promote that he was cheated out of the presidency.
Yeah, exactly.
And he's a great media manipulator. He says, hey, I got a stage. They're going to give me a stage. Okay, great. I'm going to use this to forward the narrative because I know it's not going anywhere, so I might as well use this time since they've cut him off everywhere, right?
Yeah. You know, Russ, I've told everybody, and I continue to say it, if everybody, and particularly the media, if they had read his book, The Art of the Deal, way back when he wrote it, and I've got an original copy. I've got a, it's quite valuable today, right now. I've got the original signed by him. I stood in Trump Towers while he signed my book. And if everybody would have read that book, they'd have understood where he was coming from. He's been twisting the media his entire life. And he made himself a multi-millionaire by twisting the media. And he just lays it all out in that book, The Art of the Deal.
Well, is he now twisting Congress? I mean, here they are saying, okay, hi, you've been banned from Twitter. You've been banned from Facebook. You've been banned from YouTube. We've shut down any forum that would have you, shut down Parler and whatever else. So you've got nowhere to speak. It's really hard for you to get your message out. And now, by the way, we want you to come and answer and get a whole bunch of airtime while everybody's watching this partisan battle continue. I mean, do they purposely want to give him this time, or what's going on with this one?
They're all eating right out of his hand. I mean, they are scared to death of the guy because they know what he can do. You know, let's face it, he's got 75 million people out there. They all voted for him.
There's a lot of people that don't believe that. You look at some of these people, what they post, and they, you know, they're going, well, okay, Trump supporters, are you now ready to realize that the guy you were backing was wrong since he lost the election? I'm going, well, I don't think that's what people think when they lose an election, that their guy was wrong. They think we lost, right?
Right. Not him.
And you've got an NPR PBS NewsHour Marist survey that finds that 60% of Americans say they trust the results of the 2020 presidential election, meaning they didn't think there was fraud that determined the outcome. But you put that the other way, and it's a staggering 40% of Americans who believe there was sufficient election fraud to have changed the outcome of the last presidential election.
Well, I have to tell you that the best example of his followers is this latest Mildred Green. I mean, she is a piece of work. And the stuff she spouts out of her mouth is the kind of stuff, you know, it drives you crazy. And I just read an article where several of the people that were in the riot that they have arrested never even voted. I mean, these are country bumpkins that don't know shit from Shinola, excuse me. But, you know, they voted for the guy. They love him.
Well, you had 73 million people voted for him, roughly half the people voting. I mean, there's only a small margin that elected Biden. It wasn't a landslide by any means, right?
No, not at all.
And was it all because, who is this lady's name? Mildred what?
Green, G-R-E-E-N-E.
I tell you, Bill, I have been so busy. I've been tied up in so many different things. I haven't been able to keep up.
She got elected by saying she was going to shoot Pelosi.
I'm going to have to go and look that one up. That just sounds too intriguing to follow. I'm sorry. I should be more up on this. That's why we got you on the show here.
Pardon me?
That's why we got you here, to keep us up on Mildred Green.
Yeah, right. I got to tell you, she's... Yeah, you just go to CNN, go to Fox. She's all over the place.
Okay. Well, you've got 40% of Americans believe there was election fraud. Was there any election fraud?
No.
None?
Well, you know, there's always this or that, but nothing to the extent of what he made it out to be. He lost the election, pure and simple.
All right, so... Tell me about the book, how it is. Is this predicting civility or calling for it, or where are we going with the book?
Yeah, it's laying the groundwork. There will be a series, just like the last series, that covered Trump's presidency. This one will cover the Biden presidency, and I'm hoping for good things, and whatever comes up will be in the next couple of books.
Well, there's a big reversal in the first day in office. What, 17 executive orders that reverse a lot of stuff that a lot of people liked.
He's unwinding. he's unwinding a lot of the stuff that Trump put in, and we'll see where that goes.
You think people are happy about the Keystone Pipeline getting shut down?
The Indians are.
Well, I saw two articles on that. One where they didn't like it going across their lands, and the other one where we're talking about how it was providing them economy. Which ones, are those valid?
Well, they're both valid. The pipeline obviously provided a lot of work for the construction industry, but it also went across sacred lands, and you know, and they didn't spend enough time trying to work with the Indians to get them to understand, you know, so now it's stopped. That's not a good thing either.
Well, now it's all going to run by rail, but there's a whole lot of jobs being lost there. And so that's not that, and there's something that's not going to bring civility. And then the border wall stopped. Certainly a lot of people have strong feelings on that one either way. So that's not going to bring civility. I mean, before we had militia down there, you know, because the government wouldn't put up a border wall. They were down there, armed conflict down there, trying to, I don't know what, shoot up the place or block people from coming through. So that's going to get started up again. Is that what we're looking at?
Yep. No question about it.
There's a whole bunch of stuff like that that people feel very strongly about. I personally can't see how we're headed into civility. I think we're headed into, unless people who are just, you know, the 73 million and say, okay, well, that's great. Let's just go along with it. I'll just, it's a new day, so let's all just get along. I mean, and besides that, they feel like the person that they were supporting was beaten up to no end. I hear my mom, you know, she's 93, and she says, you know, I can't ever remember a president who was ever so beaten up and as she puts it, abused and treated so badly as Trump. And I mean, she remembers Nixon and who got a pretty bad dose of it. Do you think everybody's just going to forgive and forget on this one? I mean, I already see people posting stuff, impeach Biden.
Yeah, no, I don't know. Nobody's going to forgive and forget. And I go way back, you know, I just my 90th birthday was a few months back. And, you know, I go all the way back and I watched Saturday afternoon matinees. I watched Hitler rise to power. And the techniques that Trump used were awful similar.
Yeah. Well, anyhow. All right. So where can we get the book?
Available on Amazon. All the books are on Amazon.
Is it there now?
This one, it won't be there until probably Friday.
Okay.
And it like all the other ones, digital or paperback.
All right. Well, hey, Bill, can you hang on the line with us? We got to pay some bills around here.
Sure.
Okay, we'll be back more with Bill Effinger, author, and, a whole lot of other detail we get into, but there's not enough time right now. We'll get into that when he gets back. Right now, this is Russ Betts on iHub Radio, and we're back soon.
Read about it tomorrow. See you tonight. Hear it all day today. If it's happening in the Coachella Valley, it's front and center now on iHub Radio.
No way. That's incredible.
Now, here's Russ Betts.
All right, we're here with a conversation with Bill Effinger, and I'm just going to give you a quick rundown on Bill's biography. He was born in Duluth, Minnesota in 1930. August 4th, and he's been successful in a whole bunch of areas as a developer, a home builder, a mortgage lending, sales and land acquisition specialist. He was the mayor of Buena Park, California, and he does lectures on how to be an entrepreneur, and he's a marketing consultant, a business coach, and a political activist, which is how I know Bill best, and you can see that in a lot of his recent writings covering the local politics or the national politics and the Trump presidency, and now moving into the Biden presidency. So, Bill, did I miss anything in all that?
No, you got it all, Russ.
Okay, good. I missed the intro at the beginning. I thought I'd at least let everybody know. You've been on the show plenty of times, so if people don't know by now, they should. So, you know, it's interesting. I've got this Rasmussen tracking poll in front of me, and the Gallup used to do a tracking poll, but they quit doing it, so Rasmussen's the only one who does it. And they're showing at this time in Trump's presidency, he was at 53%, and Biden at this point is at 49%. And according to the poll, it says that 49% of likely voters approve of President Biden's job performance and 46% disapprove. And the, included in those numbers are 33% who strongly approve and 38% who strongly disapprove. And he's got a presidential approval index of -5. And so, you know, and that all tracks about the same. If you go back and track with Obama and Trump and now Biden, they all seem to follow the same pattern, hovering around half the country likes him and half doesn't. I'm wondering how that bodes into civility for going ahead. I don't know.
Well, you know, we're just going to have to wait to see. That's for sure. And, you know, one of the things that you can't deny, and I predicted, and I think you remember when we had this conversation, the first book I wrote about Trump was a novel, actually. But in that book, I started writing the book on the day he rode down the elevator, or in his hotel lobby, in his building, and that was the day I actually got his book signed. Well, no, I'm sorry, that was not. But on the 15th of June in 2015, when he came down that escalator and said he was going to run for the presidency, I predicted and wrote in that book, I started writing it that day, that he was going to win the election. The man is a super salesman. He's the best thing since P.T. Barnum. He can make people think they're drinking wine when they're drinking water. And he's an incredible salesman. And that's what he is. And like it or not, he'll sell people, as I said, he'll sell people water and make them think they're drinking wine.
Doesn't that describe a lot of politicians, though? You know, I mean, a lot of people out there are pitching themselves, right?
Oh, sure.
You know, I just went through an election, and I sat with a council member, Annie Ellie Zavala, who she got elected, did really well, you know, had a really good result in the election. And then it was getting time to run again, and she went, God, you got to go out there and do this shameless self-promotion. It's so embarrassing. You know, you got to go out there and sell what you're doing, you know. Well, she ended up... she was young, in her 20s, and she decided, you know what, rather than sitting here volunteering for the city council, let's take up a time. She went to law school, so she's off, you know, getting ready to take the bar and going through all that, and she says, wow, it's really tough what she's going through. But, you know, she commented, it's really terrible. You have to go out there and promote yourself like this. And so I think every politician out there does it. I mean, well, I'm not sure Biden did. He just sat in his – did he do any campaigning at all?
Biden?
Yeah, I mean, the impression, well, he wasn't out there like Trump was on the campaign trail. He was mostly just, you know, giving a few talks here and there without huge crowds.
No, he was on the campaign trail every day of the week. You know, he covered a lot of ground. He's like everybody. And, you know, campaigning, of course, you had to do it. And when I got elected, I had to do it. And, very interesting thing has happened. There's a young fellow in Buena Park right now who he broke my record. I was 27 when I was elected mayor, and at that time was the youngest mayor in the United States, I was told. And this young man was just made mayor He was a city council person and just made mayor this past November. And he is 28 years old.
Well, he must have beat you by a couple of months then if he's now got the record of being the youngest, right?
Yes, he beat me by a couple of months.
Have you called down and talked to him?
But, oh, absolutely. And if he wanted me to come down, if we hadn't had this COVID thing, he wanted me to come to a council meeting and he wanted to introduce me and all that kind of fun stuff.
Well, you can do that all by Zoom now. Have you seen that all the council meetings are going by Zoom, right? By just virtual.
Right, yeah. So. And yeah, I do my Rotary meetings by Zoom.
Yeah, well, show up at a Buena Park meeting. Bill, I'm sure glad to have you here with us on the show today. Thanks for stopping in and updating us on the latest book. Get the name of the book again. We're almost out of time.
The name of the book is The Road Ahead, Return to Civility.
Okay. Thanks, Bill. This is Russ Betts on I.
Thank you for educating so many of us. I think you're the best.
We are the people in your neighborhood.
With great power comes great responsibility.
This is The Russ Betts Show.
All right, we're back. We just got through talking with Bill Effinger, who, well, at this point in time, I think 30-plus books. You got to call him an author, but he's done so much else in his life, and it was good to have him on. You know, it's getting really hard to have a conversation anymore. If you touch on any subject, you're going to get people just, I don't know, the word was triggered. Maybe we're going to a new word, but it just really sets people off. And I had a conversation with somebody who got started where they had posted something about Dr. Fauci and, you know, the COVID guru. And I mentioned, I said, well, isn't this the guy that told us don't wear masks, that they're dangerous? I mean, that they aren't going to help? When all the while that he was telling us that, he knew that masks would help. And they got incensed at that, as if I was like, oh, how dare you speak out against Dr. Fauci? And I remember way back then when, you know, my wife and I were wearing masks in, well, right about now, a year ago, we started the Dawn mask as we were going in the store. I remember being in the 99-cent only with the store with my wife. She and I are the only two people in the store wearing a mask, and everybody's looking at us funny. But we have friends and family that were in China, that live in China, still do. And we had been in contact with them, and they were telling us what was going on. And my wife says, we're wearing masks. We're not going to get this thing. And at that same time that we're hearing all that from China and understanding what this issue is, there he was telling people, don't wear masks. And I'm thinking to myself, well, this isn't anybody that I want to believe or trust. He's just plain wrong. Well, then I found out he wasn't wrong. He was lying. And he's admitted as much. He says, well, I really didn't want to tell everybody to wear a mask because, well, we didn't have enough for our healthcare professionals. I was thinking, well, you still lied. You told people masks don't do any good. Don't wear them. That's really a dangerous thing to be saying to people, especially when you know it's not true. Now, you could have been saying, like, hi, find some kind of face covering. Don't wear N95 masks because our healthcare workers are having a hard time getting enough of those. And it wouldn't have made any difference anyhow because healthcare workers were having a hard time getting N95 masks before anybody started talking seriously about this pandemic COVID. We have a hair salon. My wife and I have a hair salon, and we use N95 masks all the time. It's part of the, you know, personal protection equipment for the business. We were trying to find them, and everywhere was out. Normal places we go, the beauty supplies were out, everywhere was out. We go down to Home Depot, and we find out that, well, we sold out. Every last one's gone. Somebody came in and bought 3,000 of them. So they came in, and they bought all these things, and they shipped them overseas. They're all gone. The entire inventory of the U.S. was cleared out, sent back to China before Dr. Fauci ever uttered anything about masks. And so I'm sitting there going, you know, to me, somebody lies. Like that. Not wrong. If they're wrong and he comes back and says, geez, I was wrong. I you should be wearing them. That's not what he said. He said, no, I purposely lied. So I can't hold anybody up like that. Who, so all of a sudden, and now he's sitting there, he's gone from don't wear a mask to, well, yeah, wear a mask, wear a mask, wear a mask, to now wear two masks. And at the same time, this guy's telling everybody to wear a mask. He's caught on camera at a ballpark. Watching a ball game that nobody else is allowed to watch it, but he gets to get these special seats in the ballpark, sitting there without a mask. And it just gets to be, I don't understand what's going on where people just like line up and salute somebody so fervently that if you say anything negative about them, and I'm going to get a bunch of email on this one probably, oh, how dare you attack Dr. Fauci? And I don't know what it is. Maybe it's because, you know, I heard somebody say, oh, well, he really gave it to Trump. And so maybe it's this Trump coming into it again, the poison that's out there. Because he didn't like Trump, then it's okay, I like him. I don't know. Anyhow, and it's the same thing with Gavin Newsom. You know, he's facing this recall, which is getting serious. There's some money behind it now. And one of the candidates, this is a former mayor, I forgot who that is starting to raise money because he's anticipating that the recall will be successful. In case you don't know how recalls work, there's going to be a ballot measure that says, should Gavin Newsom be recalled? And if yes, then who do you want to vote for? And there's going to be a list of candidates that you choose from, and there'll be an election. And, you know, I've watched as Gavin Newsom has handled this crisis, and it hasn't been good. Nobody can say it's been good. Restaurants, okay, if they're supposed to close, then close. And but it's, you know, it's like on 3 days notice, close your restaurant, take thousands of dollars of inventory and just scrap it. But you got a restaurant, you don't just close the door and all the inventory stays there. You have to make a buy. And if he knew he was going to close them, he should have given people, say, hi, you got a couple of weeks to work out your inventory. Don't buy anymore so you don't get stuck. I know a local restaurant here lost $72,000 worth of inventory. I know another restaurant that ended up giving away cooking meals and giving it away for free just because they knew the food was going to go bad. They might as well serve some people. And so, you know, and then he says, okay, now you can open again, but for outside dining. And they open again for outside dining, except that they quickly tell them, okay, after spending all that money outside dining, now close down again. And then, okay, now you can open up again. And then close down again. And it's like, the pandemic's bad enough and hard enough for these businesses to deal with without a governor who's operating, who has the slightest clue of what it takes to be in business, knows in advance what he's going to do, gives no advanced warning, and then goes out and makes these pronouncements. And then the pronouncements he makes are, we're doing a total lockdown. We are going to shut down and what did he call it? Shelter in place was the term he used. That's a nice term. It sounds really serious. Shelter in place. And as soon as he makes that announcement, you hear, you know, you get phone calls from people going, hey, well, what do I do? How do I get my medicine? How am I supposed to get my medicine if I shelter in place? And, you know, what's going to happen? Somebody going to bring it to me? Well, that's not, you know, that's what shelter in place means to everybody else. And it's a nice dramatic word. And I'm sure it's PR people going, hey, let's look through and find a phrase that will really sound like you're tough. And then he issues it. Well, it turns out there was no such thing as shelter in place. It was just all fantasy, but people taking it serious. You know, Walmart's wide open. Bed Bath & Beyond is wide open. Home Depot, all the big stores are wide open. I mean, if you want an essential ironing board and iron, just walk into Bed Bath & Beyond and you can get that essential ironing board and iron. So, you know, and then he had this curfew he put out. It was a curfew. And people said, well, what am I going to do? Would I tell my boss, you know, I normally get off at 10, but the curfew's at 10. Do I tell my boss I got to leave a half hour early so I can get home in time? And, you know, big tough word, like I'm issuing a curfew. Well, then you go read the the order that follows, and it says, nothing in this order prevents any number of persons from the same household from leaving their residence, lodging, or temporary accommodation as long as they do not engage in interaction with any number of persons from any other households except as specifically permitted herein. And then you got pages and pages of this regulation, and what it means is, yes, you can go out of your house. There's no such thing as a curfew, and besides that, nobody's going to be out there enforcing it. So it's just, you know, the curfew sounds tough. Shelter in place sounds tough. But at the end of the day, it's not tough because it's meaningless. And what makes it all the more meaningless is you got Walmart and these big box stores that are known to be spreaders operating as a business as normal. So some poor sap with a store that sees maybe 5 to 10 customers a day, and that's how this person makes their living as a sole proprietor, is told they're too dangerous. But go stand in line at Home Depot, Walmart, anywhere else. Nothing against those stores, but, I mean, some places are wide open business as usual. And then other places are, you know, I'm reading this one. Sounds like Walmart. There's a comment here from social media, a page that I belong to. It says, everyone was stacked up. I've never seen so many people in Walmart as if it was if Black Friday in a normal non-COVID year. They're talking about the crowds of people lined up for Black Friday at Walmart. There was no control. There was no stopping it down. Everybody's still talking. If you watch the news, they're still talking about how dangerous restaurants is. Is there just some, like, taboo against saying, hey, guys, anyhow, they didn't lock anything down. And then on top of it, you got Newsom ends up in a restaurant. And originally he was there with 12 people and that it was outdoors. Well, it turns out it was indoors. And it was indoors, but the doors slid open. But then it really wasn't indoors. The doors slid open because it was cold, so they closed the doors. Then it turns out it wasn't really 12 people, it's 20 people. And here's a guy knowing that he's just issued orders for everybody not to dine indoors and to wear masks. And he's dining indoors and not wearing a mask. And you had all kinds of state legislatures from California all went off on a trip. We're not allowed to travel anywhere. Don't travel. Stay at home. Don't spread it. And they all go off on a convention in Hawaii with their families. I mean, it was, if the convention was so important that they must have gone to Hawaii to attend it, you don't bring your family, you know, because of the seriousness of the pandemic. But they did. They brought their families. So not only did they aggravate the situation with this necessary travel to go to Hawaii in the winter, they brought their families with them. And it's just all the way down the line. We've heard all the stories. And so it's hard for people to believe. And as that translates into a recall here in California, people are saying, you know, this guy has not done a whole lot of good at management. And then you take a look at the unemployment office. They call it the Employment, the Economic Development Department, EDD. It's not the unemployment office anymore. You're supposed to call it EDD. And look how messed that up with how many millions or billions, I was billions of dollars that went to people who listed their addresses in a prison or who were prisoners. And so to tighten that down, they've cut off everybody's benefits. There's people going through all kinds of trouble trying to get re-identified. And it just go. There's just mismanagement on a grand scale. And I had a conversation with somebody. They told me, well, you know, it's really not his fault. He doesn't run the Economic Development Department. And I go, well, that's what a governor does. They're the administrator. And a few less press conferences and a few more time rolling up your sleeves and getting in there and finding out what's going wrong with a place and getting it straightened out and getting somebody hired that can. It's a mess. Anyhow, so he's facing a recall, and I don't know how many signatures they're at. And he's 1.5 million. They're at 1.3. I just had something show up in my mail. It's actually a paid ballot. It's a paid mail delivering me a recall petition to sign and pass around to my neighbors. I don't know if I'm going to do that. I'm going to sign it myself. I'm going to go ahead and sign it, at least to get it to a vote. I'm not happy with this governor. He's just has not done what he should be doing. And when you look at the recklessness and the total ignoring of you know, his own rules. I mean, how many times has that gone on everywhere? So many examples of it. Do as I say, but not as I do. And that's just not the way it's supposed to work. So anyhow. All right. I don't know. I just, you know, I get all worked up about this stuff and nobody's listening and you wonder, well, you'll find out if they're listening or not. And then who knows, you know, will the state change the rules on how the ballots are counted? They've done that before. You know, one thing for sure, this COVID is serious. I know there's people out there that think it's not. It is. And just because I don't think Fauci handled it right or Gavin Newsom handled it right doesn't mean I don't think it's serious. Our family is being very careful of it. There's a lot of people. I mean, I'm too many people I know have died from this. One's enough, and now there's several. And a lot of people are getting sick, including Congressman Raul Ruiz detailing what he's going through as he's fighting this. All right, we're back with more when we get back. This is Russ Betts on iHub Radio. We'll be right back.
live from Palm Springs.
Hey, everyone, listen to this, please.
10 years ago, you know, this was a thriving, booming economy, but we're not going to that extent. This thing isn't a total crash.
I want to tell you, you got the radio voice, my friend.
This is the Russ Betts Show.
Wow, that's really honorable.
Now, here's Russ Betts on iHub Radio.
I gave a glance at the email, and I must have touched a few nerves today in this show, but, you know, this is all just very objective. I got somebody here sitting there saying, what do you mean he didn't cause an insurrection? What did he say? I quickly wrote back and said, oh, what did he say? And he said, well, I didn't listen. I don't know. I don't know what he said. I didn't listen, but he said something. He must have said something. Anyhow, all right. I've seen so little on the symptoms of the COVID, and it seems like that's such helpful information. I really got to hand it to Congressman Raul Ruiz. If you go to his Facebook page, he very openly detailed what he was going through as he was going through it. And I think it's so valuable for people because, you know, we all get these little symptoms. We wonder what they are. And then you wonder, well, what is he going through? And he detailed it for everybody. So go to his Facebook page and have a read. It's very useful information. It's very good, and it's very good of him to put that up there. I've had a few friends I've called who've had it and made it through, and I, you know, some of them said, well, it's really tough. And the description seems to be the worst flu you've ever had in your life, only worse. I mean, some people said, well, all of them have said, wow, it was scary there for a while. So it's a scary thing to get, and the scariest part of it is when does it take a turn? When do you get what if you get one of these cases where it isn't just scary, and you make it through, but you end up in the hospital? And man, I tell you, the number of people I know who have died or friends who have had loved ones who have died from this is growing. So now the symptoms are fever and chills. And I think we've all had chills at one point in time, but these sound like, you know, from the congressman's description, is uncontrollable chills. I mean, just get under the covers, he said, and just hang on for the ride. A cough, not just a cough, but a cough that won't go away, a cough that won't even allow you to speak. Shortness of breath and difficulty breathing. And I've had friends tell me, hey, I just can't talk on the phone right now. It's taking too much out of me. Fatigue. You can go see YouTube videos where people are talking about, hey, I'm healthy. I'm 32 years old. I work out. I'm in good shape. And even going to the bathroom, getting up from my chair to go to the restroom is I'm tired when I get there. Muscles and body aches, headache, the loss of taste and smell. And the congressman indicated that he had lost that taste of smell, but that it came back, a sore throat, congestion, runny nose, nausea and vomiting, diarrhea. Now, you can have all those symptoms from something, but apparently they're much more intense than that. And then the emergency warning signs are trouble breathing, where you actually feel like you can't get your breath, persistent pain or pressure in the chest, new confusion, disoriented, inability to wake up or stay awake, and then bluish lips and face. It means you're not getting enough oxygen. And so, you know, be careful out there, people. This one is nothing to play around with. Those people out there that are anti-maskers, off on some crazy notion. I don't want to get back to that Dodger Stadium incident. I touched on it. We came up against a break earlier in the show. But I'm wondering to myself, you know, you got, what, hundreds or thousands of cars going there to get their shots. And 50 people decide that, no, you shouldn't do that, so they block the gate. And they had to close the gate for an hour. And I don't know, maybe I don't wish this, but I always say to myself, man, if I was there, I wish I was there at that time when they were doing that. Because I would be going car to car through the line saying, does anybody here want to help me move these 50 people out of the way? And if you got thousands of cars there, you're only going to take too many takers, and you're going to go get these people moved out of the way. I'm sure they're there all... they're pretty darn set in their resolve to prevent you from getting through that gate until somebody's actually in their face. You've seen that video where a guy goes and they're blocking the street. This guy gets out of the car, walks over, pushes them down, takes their signs and their banners and throws them over into a river and then opens up the line so they can all drive through. I got to think that I would not be sitting there. Maybe grab some, get their keys out of their car and push the button so you find out which cars there and the horn's honking. Go over there and say, hey, you got a choice. Either move or your car's getting destroyed. Oh, look at that, a broken window. Look at that. Oh, another one. What's this dent? I know I shouldn't be on the radio advocating this stuff, but it just, you know, I just, what I can't understand is why so many people, even if they went over there and calmly, and in a big mass, just kind of moved them out of the way and gently, hi, would you mind please getting out of the way? And if you don't move, we're going to keep moving you. I just can't understand why thousands of people waiting in line to get something. And if not that, they said they called Cal Fire. The fire truck didn't have a fire hose and just start. I don't know. I don't get it. How do we let 50 people shut down thousands of people like that? You know, those 50 people, if they want to line the street and hold out their signs and try and tell people, please don't go in, I'm all for that. But at the point in time you start blocking people's passage to do what they freely want to do, you've crossed a line. And everybody else should be free to cross that line also. You draw a line in the sand, that means I'm not letting you pass. Maybe it's time people do go past. I don't want to see, I don't know. I always worry if I'm spouting off with my innermost thoughts of what I would do if I was there. And then wondering how people react to that. But I don't care at this point in time. All right, we got Coachella Fest and Stagecoach are not going to happen again. What's this, the third year now? What an impact. I saw a news report that said, what's the impact on Coachella? And I remember when this all first hit, there was, but the tennis gardens was the first thing to close the tennis tournaments. Somebody I knew who was working that said, oh, they way back when, about a year from now, says, wow, they just shut off the tennis gardens. I was counting on that work. Okay, well, at least we got Coachella and Stagecoach coming up, so I'll work those. And then all of a sudden they weren't working those. And then you get these restaurants going through this turmoil and these small shops and hair salons shut down for months at a time. Not the big box stores. They're not shut down. I know I'm repeating myself. I get off on this rant and I just want to keep ranting. But the so you get Coachella and Stagecoach shut down. And I got a friend of mine. He does... he's a producer for a DJ, and I'm a little older. I remember rock bands packing, you know, thousands and thousands of people into a stadium and watching a rock band. Well, apparently the same thing happens with one guy and a DJ. They're pretty good, these DJs, and drew a lot of crowd in, and people have a great time, and they really know how to keep it going, and very popular. Well, he said it's been a year since they've been able to do a show. And I particularly like an artist called Joe Bonamassa. And I remember seeing him down at the Agua Caliente here when he came through. And he shuttered and everything else is shuttered. We got to get this thing back open. I don't know when, I don't know how, but we got to because this is getting old. Okay, well, we've wrapped it up for another show here, and the Russ Betts show here on iHub Radio. We got podcasts. You can go catch all this. If you missed some, if somebody says, oh my God, did you hear what he said today? You can go hear what he said today. It's all recorded and saved. We're live now, but, well, unless in case you're listening later, then we're not live. We're recorded from before, which would be now. And now is the time to bid you good day from the beautiful iHub studios here in beautiful Coachella Valley. It's Russ Betts saying goodbye and see you next week.